Hello, Fightful Faithful. Welcome to a special Monday late night edition of Sour Graps. I'd say the odds are better than 50-50 that by this time tomorrow night, America might not exist anymore. At least not, you know, the way it has for 240, 50 years. So I figured, you know, why not get this out of the way now? You know, while we still have a functioning government. Well, you know, Raw happened. And I owe you guys a review, and I know myself to know that I will be in no state to talk about wrestling tomorrow night. So let's talk about it now. Spoiler alert, I'm in no state to talk about wrestling now, but I'll be worse tomorrow. You know what a surefire way it is to signal to your subjects that you plan on honoring whatever happens in the voting? Build a non-scalable wall around your house. You know, just in case you lose and say, I'm not going anywhere, and then the people try and, you know, come in and take you out of the house. Well, they can't because of the non-scalable wall you've had constructed around it. It's, you know, that's just a surefire way, I think, to signify that everything's fine. Walmart doesn't sell guns right now. They just took guns off their shelves because they don't want to sell guns. Actually, they're really not worried about guns being sold. They're worried about rioting and looting, you know, which could happen. I don't know. it's great. Anyway, Raw also happened. Randy Orton cut a Randy Orton promo, which is to say boring, meandering, and saying the same shit. 14-time champion. Best of the best is the tagline of Survivor Series, but that doesn't do him any justice. Blah 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 blah. It's how easy it is for the hunter to become the hunted. Some shit he said tonight. I usually say last night, but he said it tonight. Alexa Bliss comes out, and she stands in the middle of the ring, and he just kind of circles around her, and she's got these gloves, and you know, the Fiend has hurt and heal gloves that he holds up. You can read the words in the back of his hands. She's got these gloves that are written on, like, the heel of your hand. Like, if you were going to do a karate chop, the part of the hand that connects with somebody when you do a karate chop. Well, right there, she's got written, what's it? It's on her right hand is play, and on her left hand is pain. Now, hurt and heal are exact opposites. Play and pain is not an opposite. We all know from watching The Shining and the slightly less famous Simpsons spoof, The Shining, that the opposite of play is work. All work and no play make Homer something something. You know, we all know that. It's not all pain and no play. It's all work and no play. So I have to call into question. I'm just kidding. It's actually pretty dope, honestly. Her holding her, putting her hands under her chin, like a little cutie, with Play and Pain, and then she takes down the play hand, so all you see is pain, and then she brings that down, and then she does, "He could be here." And then she laughs, and then we hear the fiend noise, which by all now, you all know what that is. But it's not the fiend at all. Drew McIntyre's there, and he hits him with a claymore out of nowhere. And so he gets in Orton's face after the claymore and says, "I dare you to grant me a rematch. I'm going to make you Drew's life a living hell." So he's starting to leave, and the Miz and John Morrison suddenly ring into the ring from like jump the barrier into the ring, and Miz is going to cash in his Money in the Bank briefcase, and that's smart. He's had it for like 8 days, and he's cashing it in the first time that Orton takes a claymore. That's smart. You know what's dumb? Drew McIntyre. I understand. Oh, Drew, nobody's going to take that title off of Orton but me. That's pride. Fucking with you. Fuck pride. It only hurts. It never helps. Those are the wise words of Marcellus Wallace from Pulp Fiction. And you know he's smart because he's got a Band-Aid on the back of his neck. His brain is so big, it's trying to bust out the back of his head, so he had to put a Band-Aid there. It's a Pulp Fiction reference. Sean, that one's for you. Just let Miz pin Orton. What the fuck do you care? Because guess what? Then you get a match against Miz. And yes, you've beaten Orton like 5 out of 6 times. But you could beat Miz no problem. You wouldn't even have to really work hard to beat Miz. If you really want your title back, the easiest way for you to get it back, the most efficient way, is to allow Miz to take it off of Orton, and then you pummel Miz into submission and take it from him. That's a dumb thing to do. I like my champions to be smart. Also, it would be horribly humiliating for Randy if Randy was looking around scared of a demon clown and you snuck up behind him and hit him with your finisher and knocked him out, and then the Miz scampers in and the Miz pins him off of your move to become champion. That's a horribly humiliating thing to Randy. What a great way to get vengeance on him. Instead, nobody's allowed to pin Randy but me. Fuck, stupid. So Miz and Morrison are going to try and cash in, but they actually give the briefcase to the ref, and the ref gives it to the timekeeper and says Miz is cashing in his thing, and it's announced Miz is cashing in his Money in the Bank thing. But before they can ring the bell, ding ding, Drew runs in. And he beats up Morrison and Miz, and he prevents them from cashing in. Now, not only is it stupid to not let Miz become champion, it's also stupid to not wait until the ding ding, the official beginning of the match. Because then, after that happened, then attack Miz and stop him from cashing in. Let Randy get the pin on Miz. Now there's no more Money in the Bank. So if you do beat Orton, I don't know, next week, he seems to think he's going to get the title back before Survivor Series, and I somehow don't see that happening. I don't see them giving him a match for the title on a random Raw in the Build a Survivor series. You know, there are, what, two more left? Yeah, ain't happening. But if somehow you were to get a title match next week and you beat Randy, well, the Miz is out there with that Money in the Bank thing. Who's to say Randy doesn't punch you in the head 4 or 5 times the following Monday night on Raw, and then Miz uses the Money in the Bank briefcase on you, you idiot. Dumb stuff. So, Charlie Caruso talks to Miz and Morrison. They're furious. Morrison, God, I love this guy, but again, these guys are delusional. McIntyre managed to piss off the two guys in this company. You don't want to get upset. Really? You two guys? Didn't you have a handicap match versus Braun Strowman at a pay-per-view? Like, it was just the two of you versus Braun for the title, and you lost. Come on. So they challenged Drew to a 2-on-1 handicap match for the main event. Oh, boy. A main event where we know exactly what's going to happen. Oh, those are so much fun. In case you didn't know what was going to happen, Drew was going to beat Miz and Morrison, obviously. And right after Drew pins probably Miz, right after Drew pins Miz and is about to celebrate, RKO out of nowhere. If things are that predictable, by the way, that's exactly what happened. If things are that predictable, don't make them your main event. Because, like, if I didn't have to watch it to do the podcast, I would have turned off the TV. I would not have watched it. It was, like, also, like, the last 22, 23 minutes of the show. So, what is that? There's three. So, 1/6 of your show is, no, wait, no, 1/9, sorry, because it's a 3-hour show. So 1/9 of your entire show is this match that we all know what's happening, and simply because of the way you book Miz and Morrison, the match itself isn't going to be that interesting. It's going to be them trying to take advantage of the numbers game, and Morrison will do a couple of fun spots, and Drew will kick out of everything, and he'll probably kick out of the skull crushing finale, and he did. Don't do that. Don't put these kinds of things as your main event, because, I mean, talk about boring. Like, it doesn't. I'm not interested in any of this. Jimmy Van on Listen to Your Boy last week advanced a theory that Randy was only given the title so that they had somebody for Roman to beat at Survivor Series, because they didn't want Drew to have to lose to Roman. You can't put Drew over Roman. So yeah, Roman can beat Randy, I suppose. Randy's Randy, you know. But like last year you didn't even have the top guys face each other. You had a Brock versus Rey Mysterio, and you had who was the other one? I forget. Was it Fiend? It was Fiend. But you had Adam Cole, who wasn't part of the Triple Threat. He had that match with Pete Dunne. God damn, that was a fucking great match. What? What's happening? It's late. The logical conclusion? Question mark? Hopefully, conclusion of this feud between Elias and Jeff Hardy was a guitar on a pole match. Thank you, Vince Russo. Elias does his shtick. He talks about how he's the number one best singer in the whole wide world. He gets interrupted, obviously, because Jeff Hardy does it. And so it's Elias versus Hardy. Elias is still saying that Jeff Hardy ran him over with the car. And the only way that this makes any, like, you could, I don't want them to do this because it's fucking stupid and awful, but the only way any of this makes sense is if Jeff Hardy really did run over Elias with the car. So that whole thing about Sheamus, Sheamus framing him would have been a lie. And Sheamus was telling the truth the whole time. They had nothing to do with it, but he was obviously, I had nothing to do with it, fella. Like, all that crap. That would have been a lie. Because, Elias, somebody would have had to tell you by now that Jeff wasn't actually driving the car. So maybe you did see who was driving the car, and it was Jeff Hardy. And he was drunk. And he did, in canon, in kayfabe, relapse, and then elicited all of our sympathies by saying he was framed when he really wasn't, and he knew he wasn't framed. That's icky. I don't like any of that. Can we not do that? But again, that's the only way out of this shit. That you've made Elias into this person who's just like, this is the guy who hit me with a car. No, we know he wasn't. He wasn't the guy who hit you with the car. Everyone who interviews him says, hey, Elias, by the way, Jeff Hardy didn't hit you with the car. And Elias says, yes, he did. Okay, well, great. Good talk. Again, until they figure out what the fuck they're doing with that shit, I don't pay attention to this feud. I don't care enough at all about either guy, especially Elias, who I could get behind because I think he is a future mid-card champion at the very least. He's improving all the time as a musician. I think he's really fun on the mic. He's got a very cool cadence about him. But as long as he's unwilling to accept empirical data, then get the fuck out. I don't care. I'm not into you at all. And Jeff Hardy, I'm kind of done with him as a full-time wrestler. Like, sometimes it's shit he does is just painful to watch because he just, I can feel his joints creak. Hardy is the one who gets, I barely paid attention to this shit. Hardy is the one who gets the guitar off the pole. And then he jumps doing like a double axe handle from the top rope, but with the guitar in his hands, and the guitar does not break. That's gotta hurt. I wonder if they used one of the non-gimmicked ones. There was something about where Elias is like, how dare they put this guitar up on a pole? I make beautiful music with this. This is my instrument, my soul. Dude, like 7 guitars have been broken in this feud already, and it started like 2 weeks ago. It's a little late to be precious about your instruments, Elias. So Jeff Hardy wins. There is a impromptu, as far as I could tell. I don't know of the reasoning behind it. There were 2 major tag team matches on the show tonight. One of them was for the tag belts and seemingly needlessly. And the other one had to have been for the tag belts, but wasn't. So we'll talk about that one later. Dana Brooke and Mandy Rose get a tag title shot, and like they're undefeated on Raw after 3 matches. Good. I mean, they would be, I suppose, by default, the number one contenders to Nia and Shayna, at least on Raw. But they're also teammates of Nia and Shayna on the Survivor Series team. So trying to take the title belts from them now seems a little... This is not the first time that I'm going to talk about this. This is not the last time I will talk about this thing about Raw tonight. Are you trying to win the Survivor Series matches, the five-on-fives, or not? I understand, like, I get it. You're never going to give me a reason why people want to win the matches. I'm supposed to accept it's because of brand supremacy. Or, I don't know, some twisted sense of pride. Right? My team is better than your team. Like, I've never fucking gotten that shit. It just doesn't make any sense to me. My team's better than your team because I'm on it. And we're going to win because I'm the best. Whatever. If you want to win, this seems like a dumb thing to do, to like pit the four people on the team that are worth a damn against each other 2 weeks before the actual thing. So like to build the animosity. So they'll definitely not try to have each other's back during the match that happens. It's just fucking stupid. Lana comes out to like watch and also do terrible Lana distractions. Shayna Baszler forces Brooke to tap out to the Kirifuda clutch after Lana gets in the way a lot. Lana was on the apron and Baszler was trying to pin. Was getting pinned by Brooke. So she shoved Brooke, who hit Lana off the apron. Also, I don't know if they did the spot here, the little picture in picture interview thing here or later in the show, but I'm talking about it now. He really broke up Peyton Royce and Billie Kay, former women's tag champs, who had insane chemistry with each other. You really broke them up for no fucking reason. Everyone was like, oh, Vince has real high hopes for Peyton Royce, thinks she's got a bright singles career ahead of her. So let's jettison that dead weight Billie Kay and get Billie Kay over to SmackDown so Peyton Royce can flourish on Raw in another tag team with Lacey Evans, the abjectly terrible Lacey Evans, with whom she has zero chemistry. Zero. None. Why are they to get, like, Billie Kay and Peyton Royce are best friends since high school. They have all the chemistry in the world. You broke them up to give Peyton Royce a singles push that never materialized. And now you split them up forever by putting one on Raw and one on SmackDown. And just shoved Peyton Royce alongside Lacey Evans because I don't know. It's unfathomable to me how incompetent such a simple decision is. Even if you're like, we want to break the two of you up because I really think we have something in Peyton. And then whatever happens, happens. And you're like, it's not the right time for your singles push. The thing you do then is figure out a way for them to get back together again. I know you had a stupid match where you said they had to like break up forever, but guess what? You go back on your word all the time. Go back on your word this time too. Put them back together because they're great together. The answer is that. The answer is not, well, I guess just fucking put Peyton with Lacey Evans because they work so well together. just fucking incompetent. Yeah, so Baszler makes Dana Brooke tap out, and now there are no challengers on Raw, because the only people who have any real semblance of claim to it are Rose and Brooke, who are undefeated on Raw. But I guess you're trying to say that Peyton and Lacey are now challengers? Like, when have they won a match? Or have they had a match? I know they were, like, part of that weird Four Corners deal that didn't really make any sense because Ruby and Liv were in it, and they're on SmackDown. What? So, yeah, no, it's good. It's a title match. Like, I love any time a champion has a match on Raw or SmackDown, the title should be at stake. I am on record. I would also like the challengers to earn it in the ring. Beat other challengers to earn that spot. Perhaps you could have had Peyton and Lacey up against Dana Brooke and Mandy Rose, and it'd be a really hard-fought match. And Mandy and Dana come out on top. But Lacey and Peyton say, we almost had you, and so we want our shot too, or whatever. Like, that gives them some kind of credence as an actual thing. But no, we're not going to do that. We're just going to give them a fucking title shot. But they lost the title shot clean. Well, not really. I mean, Lana was involved, but as clean as can be in WWE. Dana tapped out. That's it. That's the end. Back of the line. Although you'll find on Raw, the line of women's tag teams is rather short. Charlie Caruso interviewing Randy Orton. Randy Orton says nothing. He says, blah, 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 blah. Drew will find out what are the three most dangerous letters in WWE. RKO. Hey, Daddy. Hey, Daddy. Hey, Daddy. Hey, Daddy. Guess what? Guess what are the three most dangerous letters in WWE? RKO. I'm so fucking sick of being talked to like I'm a 12-year-old. I'm like I'm a fucking toddler. I'm so sick of it. Like, stop feeding me fucking catchphrases. I don't want them. He doesn't have to say that. He doesn't have to shoehorn that shit in there. And also, like, if you're going to say it one time, don't actually say the letters. I'm going to introduce Drew McIntyre to the three most dangerous letters in WWE and then walk the fuck off camera. Because guess what? We know what the letters are, Randall. We know. We've been following your career for nigh on two decades now. We know what the fucking letters are. You don't have to repeat them every fucking episode. R-Truth is out. It's a non-title match. A non-title champion versus champions match. R-Truth is... he's hit or miss for me, and he's definitely more miss than hit. When he hits hard. When he hits, it's really, really good. But he's got a really bad batting average right now for me. It's like one out of every 10 things is funny. Again, that one hit is a home run, but the other ones are terrible strikeouts. Like, he's just whiffing at things in the dirt. It's bad. His whole, like... like, he did this once before. He doesn't call it a full Nelson. He calls it a Nelson from The Simpsons. What? Like, no. You could call it a full Nixon. You could call it something else. I can understand how you would not know that. But nobody would get that confused. That's dumb. That's a dumb thing to have him say. And also, like, I don't have a match with Bobby Lashley. No, I have a match with my favorite Adam Sandler character, Bobby Boucher. You think you have a match with a fictional character from a movie that is 22 years old? A 22-year-old movie, a fictional character from that movie, that the only thing that he has in common with the guy you actually have a match with is they have the same first name. Like, I know hey, Bobby Boucher. Yeah, I remember that movie. Like, I know there are probably a lot of people who are like, that was funny. If you break it down, it can't be funny. It's not possible for it to be funny if you actually stop and think about it. Why does this person? I mean, if Truth actually thinks he's going to have a match with a fictional character from a movie that's 22 years old, and that fictional character is going to sign his water bottle, then Truth has brain damage and you have to take him out of the match, strip him of the title. Like, you got to put him out to pasture. He's done. Oh, is it just a TV show? Is it just a TV? Oh, it's just a TV show. I should just let it go. Okay. Yeah, I guess I should. Far be it from me from wanting this. Like, is it, it's either a set in a fictionalized world or it's not. It is set in our world, as far as I know. All these people show up to be interviewed as their characters' names. You know, when Roman Reigns were to go on Good Morning America, they're not interviewing Joe Anoa'i. They're interviewing Roman Reigns. The characters bleed over to this world because this is the world. So in this world, if you have a character who thinks he's having a wrestling match against a 22-year-old fictional character, Well then I don't think he's following the concussion protocol correctly. However, I did appreciate him using a little bit of logic. Listen, Bobby, I didn't even know I was gonna be facing you. And this is a non-title match. You're a champion, I'm a champion. Let's just have a little respect back and forth. Non-title match, so here's what we're gonna do. I'm going to lay down and you pin me. How about that? That's the first smart thing a champion's done all goddamn night. But of course, Lashley won't do it because, you know, he's, I don't know, wants to win it the honorable way. So he picks up Truth. Truth tries to get in a few shots. Lashley gets him in the Nelson from The Simpsons. And then that's all she wrote. After that, Truth is out cold in the middle of the ring, and Drew Gulak runs in. And Drew Gulak tries to get a pin on Truth. But Lashley won't let that happen. So he picks up Gulak, poor Gulak, poor Drew Gulak, and he's not even the one I'm saying poor blank about the most in this episode, but poor Drew Gulak. It's picked up off of Truth like a rag doll, put in the full Nelson, and this is the one thing about it that I liked. Then Bobby Lashley is like, yeah, you know what? That was kind of a dick move. You were going to become champion here, and drapes Drew's lifeless body over Truth's even more lifeless body so the ref can count the 1, 2, 3 and Drew becomes champion. So Drew is now 24/7 champion again. Again, as I mentioned last week, he's a goddamn technical wizard and a murder machine in the ring if you let him. But nope, comedy. It's amazing to me that he's so good at the comedy stuff too, as we saw a couple years ago when he was Enzo's stooge in 205 Live, but he's a technical wizard. You should let him use his wizardry and not trying to get schoolboys on people. Oh, man. It's late. Lindsay and Grand Metalik are backstage. Lindsay Dorado. Let's find Drew because he's unconscious. We'll pin his championship, and then they run into AJ's giant friend. I'm not allowed to say giant. AJ's enormous individual. Lou Jazz Party runs away because again he's very large, and just his mere presence causes grown men to shit their pants and run in the opposite direction. Blonde, not Charlie Caruso, talks to Nia Jax. I want to ask you about Lana. Never say her name in my presence. Never even think her name in my presence. She's a little butthurt over being put through a table, is what Nia says. She said, I guess I missed this part. Lana prides herself on always getting back up. She does. She botched this thing. I think originally they were like, the original plan was if Lana faces Nia, who doesn't like that not Lana is on her Survivor Series team. So the original stipulation was if Lana loses to Nia, Lana's off the team. But then they were like, no, she kind of has to be on the team. So we'll change that step. Don't worry about it. And then Nia used the original script that she had memorized before Vince rewrote it 20 minutes prior. She's like, by the end of the night, Lana will either be off Team Raw. I'll tell you what's going to happen. I'm going to end her career, which that's just her improv and some shit because she lost the thread there. So AJ talks about how he's going to be captain. He's going to introduce people on his team. Again, you could do this next week or the week after once you actually have everybody on your team. You've only got 3 out of 5 guys. So it's weird to like, I'm the team captain and here we go. I'm going to tell you who's going to be on the team. These 3 guys, 2 other guys, we haven't decided yet, but you'll hear about them later. This is a weird thing to do this. The conceit of this promo doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So he gives, he introduces Sheamus first and then Keith Lee. AJ is, trying to be a good team leader. Your success is my success. It's good. I don't care who we have to go through on Team SmackDown. And Lee's like, wait a minute. I don't remember ever agreeing to call you the team captain. Why is this a dick measuring contest? Who the fuck cares? What does it matter who's team captain? Literally, what does it matter? What do you get out of it? Is there a bonus? I mean, I said that they should split the winning team. There are 5 of them. They split $1 million. If your team wins, everybody on the team gets $100,000, right? If your team wins and you are a survivor, you get an extra $50,000. Okay? If your team wins and you're the sole survivor, you get more money. If your team wins and you're the captain, you get a big bonus, $200,000 or something. I don't know. We'll figure out the math and we'll make it work. But I don't understand. What's the difference between a team captain and just a regular dude on the team? Is there a difference? What's the difference? You can't have this whole segment be about I want to be the captain. No, I want to be the captain. Hold up, fellas. I think, as a third option, I should be the captain. Who cares who the fuck the captain is? What does it matter? Why do you care? You don't get to pick the teams. It used to be, if you were the team captain, you got to pick the team. Well, you don't this year. Everybody's got to fucking qualify by beating somebody. Well, that makes your captainship null and void. What the fuck do you care? Why does it matter? Also, Braun Strowman interrupts after AJ's like, do you know what it'll do for my legacy if we beat Team SmackDown? Like, what will it do for your legacy? Who the fuck cares about teams, about Survivor? Listen, it used to be Survivor Series wasn't the fucking brands against each other. It was a way for feuds to end. These four guys hate these four guys. Or five guys or whatever. Five guys. I could really go to Five Guys fries right about now. Five guys versus Five Guys. I really could go for a Five Guys burger. Five Guys. They're so good though. Like, they're just like, they get just the right amount of juiciness. And then I always get the bacon too, because that's really good. The bacon's nice and crisp. So perky. I love that. So it used to be, you had, like, not necessarily factions, but, like, this guy is feuding with this guy. And this guy over here, he strikes up a friendship with this guy over here who's feuding with that guy. And so, all of a sudden, these five guys hate these five guys. Let's have a goddamn burger. Let's have a goddamn match. And that made sense. You know? Team Hogan versus Team Savage or some shit. You know what it was? Like, whatever the hell it was, right? That makes sense. Raw versus SmackDown with absolutely nothing on the line means nothing. Means nothing. Especially when it's all, well, you fucking guys, either, like, so far on Team Raw, the guy who's been there the longest is Keith Lee, who got called up from NXT in August. What the fuck does he care whether Raw beats SmackDown? Why would he care? The other guys all just got here from SmackDown. What loyalty do they have to Raw? Just give me some reason. Give me some fucking reason, please. Just any reason at all why they care. But assuming they do care for whatever reason, the most important thing is for Team Raw to beat Team SmackDown. Yes? If we accept that, then there must be other things. Like, we want the best guys from Raw on our team. Because the most important thing in the world is victory. So Braun Strowman comes out and he wants to be on the team, whatever. Lee's like, wait a minute, no. Hold up. We all had to qualify. You haven't qualified for shit. He doesn't say shit. You haven't qualified for anything yet. My qualifications make me not only on the team, but being team captain. And then they're all arguing about everything, like whatever. And then assistant to the regional manager, general manager, Adam Pearce comes out and says, like, I'd love to have you on Team Raw, but I'm having a hard time finding anybody who will agree to get in the ring with you. Well, then they forfeit. Adam Pearce, if no one will get in the ring to face Braun Strowman because they are all so afraid of Braun Strowman, that's a very good reason to put Braun Strowman on your team. But wait a minute. Is it your team, Adam Pearce? Because aren't you also the assistant to the regional manager, general manager of SmackDown as well? I'll answer that question for you. Yes, you are. You are the only visible authority figure on both brands, which means you have a conflict of interest, sir. I understand that Lee has a problem with Strowman, doesn't like Strowman, because Strowman headbutted him in the balls 2 weeks ago. Strowman mentions beating Keith Lee clean, and Keith Lee's like, you didn't beat me clean, blah, 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 right? I understand why Keith Lee doesn't like Strowman, wouldn't want him on the team, right? Sheamus, though, as we'll see later in the evening, the only thing he cares about is winning. So he should be like, actually, big man, I agree with the monster. I think he should be on the team. And honestly, AJ, I would love to see you fight him for the captainship, right? I think Sheamus as instigator is kind of troll from the sidelines, I think is a really good thing, really good use of him. And it'd be great. But no, AJ's like, hey, why don't we do a triple threat for Strowman to qualify? Strowman versus Lee versus Sheamus. And if Strowman wins, he joins Team Raw. Okay, says Pierce, that's a hell of an idea. Let's do it. But wait a minute. What happens if Lee pins Sheamus and Strowman doesn't figure into the decision? He's not on the team then? Because Lee pinned Sheamus, Strowman can't be on the team. Don't you want to have the best team? Wouldn't all be guys like who else? Who are you getting to be on the team that's not Braun? Like Dabba Kato? Is Dabba Kato going to be in the team? Even then, fucking Braun knocked him out. RIP Raw Underground. Hey, remember how you drafted all those people from Raw Underground in the draft? Remember that? That was weird. Are they ever going to be on TV, or did you just waste a whole bunch of fucking draft picks? I'm just wondering. What happened to Dabba Kato? Like, you drafted him really high. What the fuck happened to Dabba Kato? So, this triple threat, it's pretty bad, pretty badass. It's good. Sirloin beef sons of bitches. But again, don't understand why we're trying to keep Braun off the team so hard. And what happens if Braun injures one of them? Or one of them injures Braun, but somehow Braun wins the match? That's not good. And they, to their credit, bring it up during the thing with AJ on commentary. I don't know, man. Sheamus is only in this triple threat so that Braun has somebody to pin, because they're still trying to somehow protect Keith Lee. God bless him. Good for you. However, it doesn't make any sense for it to be a triple threat, because there's an option there. The possibility is Strowman doesn't figure into the decision. And then what? It's dumb. There's a scary spot where Lee tries to do a somersault over the top rope and like doesn't go far enough and hits his head on the apron, but he's fine. It's a really good hard hitting match. Strowman wins when he hits the power slam to Sheamus after Sheamus hits a bro kick on Lee. So I liked this part, honestly, with AJ being like, all right, everybody. Hey, I understand it was a hard fought match. I know you guys don't like each other. Hell, I don't like you either. We gotta be in all this in together to be on the team, to beat SmackDown. Cause the most important thing in the world is we beat SmackDown. So let's hug it out. He makes Keith Lee and Braun handshake. Keith Lee, be the bigger man, holds out a hand. I like that. Sheamus gives Strowman a hug and, like, you know, pats his chest saying, like, we're going to do this, you and me. And then he just hits Strowman with a bro kick for no fucking reason. And then Lee pounces Sheamus out of the ring, and AJ comes from behind and drops kick Lee, hitting him to the floor. And AJ's like, why are we fighting? We should all be friends. I was very happy that neither Keith Lee or Braun, saw, can I use manservant? I was trying to go for the alliteration. AJ's massive manservant. AJ's massive, massive friend. I was very pleased that neither Sheamus nor Strowman nor Lee witnessed him look in their direction and then fell down and ran away. So I was pleased with that. Angel Garza is still doing the whole I'm an asshole. Well, I give women roses. I'm a creep who's likes to creep on ladies. That's his shtick. He's talking to a special someone in the WWE universe. Like, WWE's, like, write-up of this makes it seem like he's talking to somebody specific, but he's not. He's just talking to all the ladies out there. You know, whatever. Whatever. This rose is for you. Fine. So Charlie talks to Drew McIntyre. I'm going to keep fighting until I get my rematch. The Fiend can back off because I'm going to win the title back and face Roman Reigns Survivor Series. What a match that's going to be. We already saw it. WrestleMania 2 years ago. Eminently forgettable. Yeah, I don't... I think less is more with Roman right now. Like, I don't want to see him cross brands to face another champion. Like, I want to see him do the shit he's doing right now with his bloodline, like, faction, and just build that slowly over the course of several months before he really gets going with it. I don't want to see them misuse that at all. Bray Wyatt and Alexa Bliss are there. Abby the Witch says Randy can go fuck himself. It's bleeped out. Bliss tells Alexa Bliss is there. She says, there's no foul language in the funhouse, so you can put in the swear jar. And Abby says, you can go fuck yourself too. Yowie wowie, says Alexa Bliss, who again is having an absolute blast. And you can tell she's having so much fun playing this character. And God bless her. She's doing a great job of it. Wonderful. Good. Happy for her. There was Bray Wyatt talked about how Orton was a very bad man. And he says, when from the ashes of you burning my childhood home, I was able to create a new world. I'm glad that they're specifically saying that. Like, Bray's never been the same since he lost the title to Randy. Never been the same. So I'm glad that they're actually coming up with reasons for that. So yeah, they do this thing. You hear the burning. You hear screams. Orton, like, is a Wyatt just staring out into the distance, and like the filter goes all weird and orangey. It's all good. So he never forgets. So before we go, says Alexa, I want to show you a new trick I've been practicing. So White does the heel glove over her face, and her eyes get spooky contacts. I thought that was the trick. The trick was that while using a camera cut, we put in new contacts. Nope, it's not that. She's got the creepy eyes, and she's looking ahead, and then like this, looks like her tongue is a fruit by the foot. It's like a little long red thing. Is it jello? I don't know what it is. Something's oozing out of her mouth, or maybe it's supposed to be a tongue. I don't know. It looked like a popsicle there for a bit. That was weird. I don't know. Yeah. I'm all for letting this breathe. They're trying to find their legs, figure out how to integrate Alexa Bliss fully into the Funhouse. It's not always working. But I will see. Nia squashes the fuck out of Lana. And then after the match, she does another Samoan drop on the table. 7 out of 8 weeks now. It's been going on for months. When is it going to be not funny to you people? To those of you who still find it funny. When is it going to be not funny to you people? Because it stopped being funny for me months ago. I don't get. I'm like, oh, I understand. This is what they're doing. It's long-term build. Gotta wait for it, okay? Lana is gonna wind up being the sole survivor for Raw, right? Yeah. And then it's all gonna work out. Like, she's gonna build some respect with her and Nia, and they can, no, they're not, they're gonna do it until Vince doesn't think it's funny anymore. And then they'll stop. And there'll never be any follow-up about it. And then it'll be just nothing. Lana is being used as a proxy punishment for Miro, for Rusev, for leaving the company and saying mean things about Vince after he left. When Vince doesn't think it's funny, when Vince doesn't think her humiliation is funny anymore, he'll just take her off TV. And that'll be it. We won't even hear about it anymore. I wish I had the confidence in them that other people do. We're like, oh, no, totally. Lana's going to get her comeuppance on Nia eventually. You just got to wait for it. 12 out of 13 weeks. 17 out of 18 weeks. 24 out of 25 weeks. How long is it going to take, people? R-Truth is box bag. She's walking in pain. He's wearing a neck brace. MVP is like, hey, how's it going? How's your neck? And she's like, oh, I was walking the wrong way. We signed your water bottle, which is cute. You know, in a dickish high school jock kind of way. We signed your water bottle, and they throw it at him. VIP lounge. It's Hurt Business. MVP, Shelton, Cedric. Bobby Lashley. Lashley's in a nice suit now. Apparently, all of the thing he did to R-Truth was all just to send a message to Sami Zayn. I really do hate this. It was fun last year when NXT was included because that was a little something different. This, I don't fucking care. You haven't properly built any of these things so that make me want just like, it's not. How is Sami Zayn versus Bobby Lashley a dream match? How is that a dream match now? Yeah. not after the last time we got to see them face each other. I wonder if Bobby Lashley's sisters will be in the Thunderdome on the screens. Remember those sisters? Remember that? Remember that horrible trans joke that they made Sammy do? That was fun. So, MVP says, we lived up to the arrangement we had WWE. We took care of their retribution problem, which is like, yes, I suppose you did. And now we payment in the form of gold, raw tag gold. So New Day come out, and this is a long ass promo, but somehow everybody involved makes it work. They trade barbs back and forth. It's not breaking any new ground. At one point they make a joke. I mean, MVP points out, like, yes, you're WWE, because they're comparing resumes. MVP says, yes, Kofi, your WWE title was very inspirational. I was very moved when you won the title. But as I recall, you lost the title in about 8 seconds. And they were like, and then the New Day says, 8 seconds? That's weird, because that's how long Lana says that Bobby Lashley can last in the bedroom. Oh, a premature ejaculation joke. And we all laughed. Ha, ha, ha. Ha, ha. Ha, ha, ha. Ha. So, but then MVP says, he's like, we're all about the jokes and we're about business. Oh, you dress like clowns and we dress like professionals. And then he says, Shelton and Cedric are looking forward. You guys like to dance. We look forward to dancing with you. Shelton and Cedric are going to dance with you and take your titles. And then the New Day respond in some fashion. So I thought, because they were like, we took our payment in the form of a tag title match versus the New Day, which we will get at a later date. We're not sure when, but definitely not tonight, because tonight's a non-title match. I didn't figure that out until after the match, because when Cedric, spoiler alert, pins Kofi, or Xavier, whichever one. When they pin Xavier, I believe. I was like, holy shit. Holy shit, the Hurt Business are the champions? And they were like, no. It was non-title. So all that shit about we're getting our payment for beating up the Retribution, we're getting our payment in gold some other time. Like, the titles weren't even on the line. Like, okay. So this was just another non-title match that the challengers win to set up a future title match. Okay. That's really not great, guys. Like, all the entire promo from both sides indicated that the coming match was to be for the titles, but then it wasn't for the titles. It was like you wrote a promo for them when the titles were going to be on the line and decided, no, let's not do that. Let's change the thing, but then you didn't change the promo? Interesting. Nikki Cross walks up to Alexa Bliss, who's got her back turned. This is my favorite part, one of my favorite parts of this thing. It really was. Oh, I forgot to mention this. And I like this a lot. The New Day, man. They're very smart. We are your 10-time tag champions. And then Kofi looks at Xavier and says, 10-time or 9-time? Because that was kind of confusing. Like, we were 9 times when we were on SmackDown, but now we're on Raw. And are we 10 times now? Or 9 or 10? That was confusing. Should we say 10 times? Sure, we're 10-time team. Hey, we beat the Dudleys! Like, there was a thing. When they switched, like, does the reign on SmackDown continue on Raw now that they just swapped belts? Or Does it now another tag reign? If it is, they beat the all-time record for most tag reigns without actually winning a match to get that 10th reign, which is fucking stupid. And you know that that bothered the hell out of Woods, because Woods is a smart dude who follows this kind of stuff. And like the legacy of that, of being the guys to become the first ever 10-time tag champs, but to do it via a backstage segment where they just swapped belts with the other guys, is shitty. And they know it's shitty, so they figured out a way to address it in this promo. And I like that. I like that. Hey, we beat the Dudleys. Cool. And then move on, because that's what WWE did. Basically, they did that. Hey, you beat the Dudleys. Cool. Let's move on. Anyway, Nikki Cross walking backstage, and then on the bottom, it just is a little graphic says Nikki Cross. She's walking backstage not to be interviewed. She's walking backstage looking for her friend, Alexa, and she finds her and proceeds to talk, to give a monologue to her back about, you know, why this, the Fiend is controlling you. I don't understand why you're such a slave to him, but the way she says it in her very thick Scottish brogue is, I don't understand why you're such a slave to him. And I honestly thought she had said, why you're such a slave to Ham. And I was like, no, that's Otis. Otis is a slave to Ham. Ah, it's late, guys. I'm tired. Finally, Alexa Bliss turns around and she's wearing the spooky contacts. So Nikki Cross runs away. If I was trying to talk to my friend who I felt like was ghosting me because she was, you know, being influenced by her new boyfriend, and finally I got a chance to talk to her, and she turned around and she was wearing spooky contacts. But like, see, he's even making you wear spooky contacts. Like, that's not you. I would be like, oh my God, you're possessed by a demon. And I'd run away. You know, I wouldn't do that. That's stupid. Here's another thing that's stupid. Tucker turned on Otis, cost him the Money in the Bank briefcase. They didn't follow up on it the next night. Tucker turning on Otis, ending a very long storyline. They didn't follow up on it at all. And then now, 2 weeks after that, Tucker is on Raw facing Ricochet. Ricochet, apparently, there was a backstage argument between the two. There's no footage of this. Usually there's footage that they show on the show. They didn't. Ricochet took exception to how Tucker treated Otis. So a challenge was laid down, and this is the match because of it. Tucker had fairly long hair. Now you should wear it like in like a half pony, up kind of tied back around his ears. He cut it. He's cut it. He used to wear a singlet, you know, in the yellow and black Heavy Machinery colors. Now he's wearing like black and red tights, like long tights. Looks totally different. Everybody on my timeline was like, I thought that was a jobber. A, because he looks different. B, because he didn't get an entrance. C, because if you were watching on mute, there's no way you knew that was Tucker. And D, because he got squashed in 30 seconds. Mustafa Ali comes down to watch Ricochet versus Tucker for some reason. And while this is happening, Tucker loses in 30 seconds. A couple of super kicks and the recoil, that weird little running code breaker that Ricochet does, and that's it. One, two, three, done. So they broke up Heavy Machinery, forced them to split. They had one guy turn on the other one, but they kept them separate on different brands. So they can't even have a feud about it. One guy turned on the other, cost him his Money in the Bank briefcase. They can't even have a storyline that comes out of it because they put one guy on one brand and one guy on the other one, so they're separate. So they can't even do the feud. Then the guy who turned, which is usually like a major monumental part of his career, the guy who turns, imagine like Seth Rollins turning on Dean Ambrose and Roman Reigns, and then we'll see if we ever do anything with you, kid. Shawn Michaels hitting the sweet chin music on Jannetty, sending him through that barbershop window, and then Shawn Michaels, well, you know, you'll lose in 2 weeks to some guy in 30 seconds. We'll see. We don't have anything for you right now, kid. You don't get to do that angle of the breakup unless you have a plan to deal with it afterwards. Otherwise, it's just stupid. And also, poor Tucky. Poor Tucky. Again, I said this before, he's by far the more talented over Otis. By far. In every facet of wrestling, he's by far more talented. Unless you count, like, jiggling your belly to get over with the idiots in the crowd, a facet of wrestling. In which case, Otis has him beat there in spades. But talking, ring work, presence, everything else, Tucky. I also mentioned that when he attacked Otis and cost him the briefcase, that I thought that Otis, that Tucky was going to have a much better career than Otis overall. But I also said, I think it might be on a different brand, on a different show, on a different company. Well, that was proven today. Mustafa is sitting there, standing on top of the announce desk. And after Ricochet wins this squash in 30 seconds, he orders all the rest of Retribution to go in. And they knock Ricochet to the outside. And then they beat the fuck out of Tucker. And then they bring Ricochet back inside. And then he tries to fight back. And they beat him up. They hold him. And Ali talks in his face and says, "No sin is forgiven until it is punished." Which is a badass fucking line. I like that a lot. I don't know what Ricochet's sin is. Earlier today, on Mustafa's like hacker alt on Twitter, released a little promo that he'd done himself, which tied up all the loose ends of the stupid shit with Retribution's masks and the terrible names. It was not aired on Raw tonight, although he did bring it up during Raw talk after Raw. But he says that, imagine, everyone judging you just because of your name, just because of the way you look, getting that prejudice your entire life. Imagine a man named Mustafa Ali, just the way it would be to go through life in this country with that name, looking like somebody who has the name Mustafa Ali. Now, imagine why a man named Mustafa Ali would give masks and silly names to these people to remind them every day that that's what they're being judged for. It's got some holes in it. Namely because, you know, as a giant black guy, I think Mace knows how it is to be prejudiced against. Mia Yim, also a person of color, I understand. Donovan Dijak, Slapjack, maybe not. But, you know, Shane Thorne and Dijak probably, no, I understand that. He's trying. For the love of God, Ali is trying to make this fucking thing work. He's trying. It's never going to happen because Vince doesn't want it to. But they didn't get their asses kicked tonight. The four of them beat the hell out of Tucky. Again, poor Tucky. And then they beat the hell out of Ricochet. They did their double choke slam thing. That's okay. Ricochet versus Ali is a fucking feud I could get behind if they're going to give it any time. I'd be fine with that. No sin is forgiven until it is punished is a fucking great line. Put that on a t-shirt. There's a really cool segment backstage, I gotta say. Drew is stopped by Sheamus. And Sheamus is like, hey, it's good to see you. You can tell they've been friends forever. And if you've seen the big documentary on Drew McIntyre on the network, they've been friends for like 15 years. I want you to be the final member of Team Raw, Survivor Series. It would be so great to fight alongside you again. We had you in our corner. There's no way SmackDown could beat us. And Drew says, I'd love, it'd be so good to fight your side again. But I'm focused on the champion. On Randy Orton and being champion to go into Survivor Series. Like, it's cool, you know? I understand. If you change your mind, you let me know. You got my number. Drew starts walking up to the station. Hey, for me, I'm going to claymore the head off of that gobshite. I didn't actually say that, but Miz and stuff the contract down the throat of Morrison for me. And I thought this was so cool. I mean, it's like, oh, faces and heels being civil towards one another. Mass hysteria. But seriously, these are two guys who've known each other and been friends for 15 years. I like that they can have a civil conversation with each other. Even though one guy is nominally a heel, one guy's nominally a babyface, it just means that there's some things stronger than that. You know? Like brand supremacy! You know what I mean? I'm serious. Like, that'd be kind of cool to watch these guys like actually... Like, Sheamus is a dick to everybody, but Drew could say something like, you don't know him like I know him. Like, yes, I understand. Believe me, I do. I know what a dick he is to everybody. He's been a dick to me on several occasions, but I love the guy like a brother. That's a valuable character interaction for them to have. So I like that. I didn't like a 2-on-1 handicap where everybody knows who's going to win. And the segment is 22 minutes of the end of Raw. Everybody knows what the fuck's going to happen. Everything happens like you know it's going to happen. He kicks out of a skull crushing finale. And he hits Miz with a claymore. He gets the win. And then Randy hits an RKO out of nowhere. Fans boo. I should say, piped crowd noises are boos. And he stands and holds the title up. But then all of a sudden we hear the Fiend noise and the Fiend laugh. Oh no, the Fiend. Is he going to be here? Oh no, we're out of time. The last half hour of Raw, really. 25 minutes or so. Worthless. Could not be more worthless. Just worthless. We learned nothing. We got nothing out of it. Oh, Randy and Drew don't like each other? Huh. You don't say. That's it. Oh, Drew can beat Miz and Morrison by himself? Yeah. We kind of figured he could, considering how you've booked both of them the past 6 months. Yeah. There's nothing. It adds nothing. Making it the main event is just like a just a giant. It's not even a fuck you. It's a we don't care. We don't care. Like, this is again. Raw is just dreck. Like, if they were booking this, but I want to say one thing. Mustafa Ali keeps referring to himself as Mustafa Ali, not Mustafa Ali, which is how they pronounced his damn name for years. Mustafa Ali. And I love that now, which is why it makes me feel like it's real. I love that Phillips is now calling him Mustafa Ali. Now, he doesn't call him Mustafa Ali anymore. He calls him Mustafa Ali. So you have the lead commentator saying, yeah, shit, that's bad. We've been saying your name wrong the whole time. Which is why it makes me feel like it's a real thing. Like Mustafa Ali basically said, by the way, you've been saying my name wrong for years. And I didn't bring it up, but I'm bringing it up now. And they were like, ah, shit, yeah, that's bad. We'll say how it's pronounced. Because if it was a storyline thing and he was being the heel and he was like, you call me Mustafa Ali. That's my name. You call me Mustafa Ali. If they were doing it that way, like as part of a storyline, the announcer would insist on calling him Mustafa Ali. Mustafa Ali says we're saying his name wrong, but what do you think, Byron? Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to keep calling him Mustafa Ali. I like that they're, apparently they got a fucking memo, and this is how we pronounce it. That means something to every kid out there who's got a name that their teachers mispronounce their entire lives going through school. Like, Mustafa Ali is the world's biggest babyface. Even now he's turned heel. He still is. But I was going to say, look at how this episode of Raw ended and how the episode of SmackDown on Friday ended with Jey Uso turning to be part of Roman's new mafia. And Mafia and Roman, like, almost wordlessly setting his new dog on Daniel Bryan to rip his throat out. God damn it. That was such a masterful piece of storytelling. It's why I still love the medium of wrestling, because there's nowhere else where you get something that visceral, that feels that real in the moment. Or let's have a handicap match where everybody knows who's going to win. And I wonder if the two guys who are feuding still hate each other. Whoops, I guess they do, because one guy did his finisher to him at the end of the show. There's two different ways of doing that, man. You could do something good, or you could do something that's shit. Speaking of things that are shit, anybody out there who are going to go and vote in America tomorrow, please be safe. I'm seriously very, very worried about things that could happen at polling places. So head on a swivel. I love you guys. We have the scary thing is we have one shot to try and right the ship in America tomorrow. And I fear that it doesn't matter how many of us feel the same way I do and go out and try and exercise their right to do that, to right the ship. I feel like that doesn't matter, because there's other forces at work. But anyway, I love all you guys, and we'll see where I'm at come Saturday talking about SmackDown. We'll see where we all are at. Take care of each other. Try and try and be well. It's going to be a tough one this week. Try and be well, because everything sucks.